So again, I ask, because I think it's very important, that if this constant cycle is to be broken, if transparency comes into the gas transportation system into Europe, and you're very right, Ukrtransgaz has to be decoupled from Naftogaz. That's essential. That's what one of the major problems always was. Will the European Union not back off? That's my main concern. There will be a salami effect. You know, first Germany, goes out. Then somebody else, the French, the Austrians are vulnerable, the Hungarians. And then you're faced with a situation where nobody's left. The Czechs might be left in there, into that, the Slovaks, of course. The Poles will be supportive. But I'm afraid that if they see that there's a possibility that they will lose the old pricing structure based on oil products, they might back off very quickly and go back to the old formula in order to protect themselves against any uncertainty. And instability plays a major role in the gas, in the energy business overall. I mean, I'd love for the Slovaks, the Hungarians, and others to have LNG terminals. I would support a project by the EU to build a sea to allow tankers come to the Czech Republic and Slovakia where they could dock. So my question again, will there be political will to bring the Ukrainian pipeline integrated into the European system, kick the Russians back to their borders where they belong and sitting there drinking vodka? And I want to hear your response.
Once again, I do believe Europe will stay with Ukraine as long as Ukrainians themselves are willing to do their bit. And quite frankly, Ukrainian problem is that there are not that many people in the EU who are still interested in Ukraine. That's mostly in our part of Europe, some people in Berlin and Paris, but for many, Ukraine became totally unpredictable and difficult to understand. And I keep telling my Russian and Ukrainian counterparts, both of them, that they had a beautiful crisis in a bad time. They show they can do tremendous things this January. They were greatly prepared, both of them, Russia and Ukraine. But it was in time when, they will need us, both of them, Ukraine as well as Russia. And they hurt their standing very much this January. So if Ukraine behaves understandably to Europe, I think Europe will remain with Ukraine. If Ukraine reverts to the fratricide, it will just, people will walk away.
Okay, I believe
just about this January.
I'm sorry. Please complete your thought. But I believe we have some questions here in Washington as well.
Okay.
Thank you. My name is Kristina Kushnir, and I'm Ukrainian, and I'm a student at American University here. And I have a question. Basically, this move to modernize Ukrainian gas transportation system was like a move with a horse, if you translate it into a chess game. So I wonder what will be the next steps from European Union. Will this modernization go beyond technical assistance? Will there be some private investment? If so, does European Union expect privatization of the system? So that's one question. And the second question is, will European Union support Ukraine politically and economically in the face of Russia's emotional reaction to the developments? Basically, for example, if Russia is not going to give Ukraine this needed $5 billion loan, will there be any support from European countries? Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, on the agreement reached on Monday. I think that the ball is now in Ukrainian half of the playground. Separation of Ukrtrans gas out of Naftogaz, creation of a clear accounting in the company, and bringing clear projects. That's the condition now, because nobody is going to pour billions of euros for unspecified projects to a bank account fridge, which is not clear to whom it belongs. So that's one thing. It's now on Ukrainian side. We hope to see some movement on Ukrainian side soon. We did what we could. As for the political support of Ukraine, I think Ukraine really hurt itself this January. I really think so. And there is precious little support for Ukraine in the EU at the moment. The Czech Republic is probably one of the few last countries in the EU who still care. Am I blunt enough?
Roman, I have a feeling that it would be very unfair not to give the question to the Ukrainian service at the moment, please.
Thank you. Natalia Chirikova, Ukrainian service. The commitment the Ukrainian leadership made on Monday would not only mean that they would have to steal less or not as fast, which is difficult enough to do in the Ukrainian situation, but it would also mean that the separation of Naftogaz from Ukrtransgaz would mean that they would have to make Naftogaz a more profitable company. And for that, they would have to raise the domestic price. And Ukraine is in the middle of the economic crisis now, so they may want sincerely to raise the prices, but it might be politically impossible. Do you count in this kind of risk, or do you expect this to happen, and what would you do, the European Union, do about it?
Well, quite frankly, I don't expect Europe to do much about it, because Europe is also in the middle of economic difficulty. And, you know, faced with the protests in France and Belgium and elsewhere, and Latvia and Hungary and elsewhere, I don't think that people pay too much attention to troubles elsewhere. We have our own plate full. And, you know, our countries in the eastern part of Europe went through price liberalization of energy in the 1990s and last few years as well. And it's painful in this country. I mean, ask anyone whether he likes his electricity bill, and you know, you will probably hear a few swear words. Nobody likes that. But there will be no special treatment for Ukraine. I don't believe that. And, you know, when I listened to Mrs. Tymoshenko on Monday, and I spoke with Deputy Prime Minister Nemiria over the weekend a couple of times, they feel hurt by the fact that the IMF package for Ukraine is $16.4 billion, while the package for Hungary, which is a much, much smaller country, is much bigger. And I'm trying to politely explain that reflects the fact that some countries simply have better standing than others. So don't expect any special deals for Ukraine, no discounts, no favors.
Back to Washington.
Stanley Kober with the Cato Institute. One country that hasn't been mentioned is China. And I understand the Russians also could supply energy to China. Would it have enough? Would it reorient the supplies for China? How does the growth of the Chinese economy and its demand for energy affect Russia's energy supplies for Europe?
This is the favorite line of Vladimir Putin, that if Europe doesn't behave, he will redirect the flow to China. On that, you know, to build the pipelines, the trunk pipelines that could carry the gas from Urengoy and Yambourg to China, you would really have to spend plenty of money on that. Tens of billions of dollars. And China can also play hardball pretty well. So Russia will increase its exports of oil to China. That's already agreed, and there is a pipeline being built the East Siberian Pacific pipeline to Skovorodino to be finished. Well, originally was planned to be finished last year, but be finished probably next year. But a whole redirection of the flow, I don't see that happening at present stage. What will happen definitely that most of the new fields for oil and gas are in the eastern part of Russia, in the Asian part of Russia, North Siberia, Far East. And from there, much of this resource will probably go to countries like Japan, China, or the US and India. That's something Europe has to count with. We mentally think that Russia is our captive supplier, bound by the pipelines to supply to us. I think that we will have to learn that much of the newly discovered and newly opened oil and gas will go elsewhere.
Let's take one more question from Washington, unless our panelists in Washington want to comment.
Yeah, I'd like to say a few words about one of the consequences of the Ukrainian pipeline EU deal. One thing it will do, if anything, it'll bring greater transparency and greater accountability to the transfer of gas. And this will finally put an end, I believe, to the argument that Mr. Putin and Medvedev have used in the past that Ukraine was stealing Russian gas. The only proven incident of Ukraine stealing gas from the pipeline was back in the 1990s, when the head of Naftogaz Ukraine, a fellow called Ihor Bakai, was stealing gas, selling it on the side to Poland and Slovakia and Romania, and pocketing the money for himself, and bought a very nice property in Naples, Florida, which I visited while Mr. Bakai, then when the Orange Revolution came in, a little before it came to power, Mr. Bakai ran off to Russia, where he was given honorable, or given Russian citizenship by Vladimir Putin personally for his a great work for Russian culture. He's a criminal. And that was the only proven example of Ukraine stealing gas from the pipeline. However, all the accusations in January 2008 by Putin, Medvedev, and others that Ukraine was stealing were never proven, as far as I've seen and heard. Even the EU itself has said that there was no confirmed things. But let me ask you about this. I don't you think that in this kind of a deal where there would be much greater transparency and accountability, because the EU would look after who's doing what in the pipeline, not the Russians, because the Russians, you can always go to a back room and say, guys, you never saw this. And they say, yeah, of course, we'll split it 10% here, 20% there. Nothing happened. But the EU is going to be quite different, I believe. And I think this will have also a major impact on, corruption in Ukraine, corruption in Russia, and lead to a much more secure transportation system into where it needs to go. Let's not forget, by around 2010, the predictions are that the price of oil is going to dramatically rise again. I mean, and there are serious predictions that will go. This means that by the end of 2010, the price of gas will go up if the Russians continue to stick to the current pricing policy. So these things are really liable to come into great changes in the next year and a half, 2 years. How do you see that, sir?
Well, I cannot give you any tip on the price of oil next year. I would love to, but I can't.
I will talk about it later.
Okay.
10% here,
10%
there.
I when I spoke with my prime minister in December, and I predicted a major crisis in January for gas, and when it finally happened, and we went to Kiev and Moscow, we saw Putin and Yushchenko, Tymoshenko, he kept asking me, the prime minister, he kept asking me, how did you do it? Who did you bribe? How did you do it? So if you want a nice price for oil, let me know. But seriously, the agreement which was signed on Monday may seem maybe more important than it really is, because it's my experience with Ukraine and Russia that any agreement is only worth the amount of goodwill which is on both sides. So I do sincerely hope that Ukrainians are serious about what they signed on Monday and that they really want it. At the same time, I understand that that would mean that quite a few people in Ukrainian elite would lose out plenty of money they are getting at the moment. So we have a Czech saying that fish never dry the pond they live in. I don't know how to translate it to English, but I think it's understandable somehow. And